Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. When millions of people make up the population of jails and prisons across America, there are even more family and friends on the outside who are concerned. Today, we'll hear how incarceration is affecting the children and families of inmates. What are the challenges and what's being done in our tribal communities to make sure Native families have the resources they need? Join us for this discussion right here on our National Electronic Talking Circle, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Bureau of Indian Affairs has given the green light for the Spokane tribe to build a casino. Reporter Steve Jackson has more.
The U.S. Department of the Interior sent Governor Jay Inslee a letter Monday saying it believes the project is, quote, in the best interest of the Spokane tribe and not detrimental to the surrounding community. Governor Inslee must now decide if the decision will go forward. Spokane tribal member and former Spokane Tribe Economic Project Coordinator Jamie Sijon says the facility will bring more than 5,000 construction-related and permanent jobs to the area.
The fact that STEP will bring jobs and bring economic boost to the region, but it'll also give stability for the Spokane Tribe in our future for tribal programs, tribal housing, tribal education. That's where those dollars are going.
But there are critics of the plan. Spokane County Commissioner Todd Melke has said he's worried the casino would hamper training missions at nearby Fairchild Air Force Base. And in a press release Tuesday, Congresswoman Kathy McMorris-Rogers said the casino project presents, quote, tremendous threat to Fairchild and its future. Jamie Sijon says Fairchild officials weighed in on the original Environmental Impact Statement, or EIS, and offered no objections to the project.
Fairchild had their say on the federal level through the EIS, and that's what Department of Interior weighed in with their deciding factor on giving final approval of the project for the tribe.
This would be the second casino in the area. The Kalispell tribe operates a casino there as well and opposes the Spokane's plan. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
The Pine Ridge School in South Dakota has received a grant to address suicide. More than $200,000 from the U.S. Department of Education will aid in recovery efforts. The Pine Ridge School, which serves the Oglala Sioux Tribe, requested assistance after suicides, an increased number of counseling referrals, reports about thoughts of suicide and suicide attempts between an eight-month period. William Mendoza, director of the White House Initiative on American Indian and Alaska Native Education, says the administration is committed to working with the community as it heals. The funds come from a program which helps schools restore learning environments after traumatic events. A Lakota woman from the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation has received a national award recognizing her work in helping people in communities of color achieve economic security. Jim Kent reports.
Four Bands Community Fund Executive Director Tanya Fiddler has been honored as an Asset Builder Champion by the Center for Global Policy Solutions. The award was presented at the Closing the Racial Wealth Gap Initiative's Color of Wealth Summit in Washington, D.C. Tanya Fiddler says she's honored to receive the award and hopes it brings attention to the disparities in wealth across the country.
Those that we know as clients and customers of Four Bands, many are living and working below the poverty level, and they're working hard. They're working a couple of jobs, but for lack of access to affordable financial products or lack of access to assets, they are never going to get out of the hole. And these things are perpetuated systemically unless there's an intervention, so to speak, and we're doing that through community development and community development financial institutions.
The Lakota businesswoman has built the Four Bands Community Fund into one of the most successful financial organizations in Indian country. Tanya Fiddler continues to promote economic development ventures on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation. She notes that the asset building work Four Bands is committed to is critical in building an all-inclusive economy. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at NARF.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. When there are millions of people incarcerated in the U.S. today, just how many relatives, spouses, and children are impacted? What does it mean to be on the outside, looking in on your incarcerated loved one? We've heard that often the loved ones of Native inmates experience grief, anger, and deep emotions. So when it comes to Native America, what kind of support is available for families as they deal with the incarceration of a loved one? Today's show is part three in our series on Native Americans in the prison and justice system. And we want to hear from you. Call in and share your story. You're also welcome to call in anonymously, too. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us now from Sanders, Arizona, is Amanda Teller, and her brother and family friend are currently spending time in prison. Amanda is Navajo, and it's our pleasure to welcome her to the hour. Hello, Amanda.
Hi.
Amanda, thank you for being with us. And Amanda, you know, we hear often about statistics when it comes to people who are incarcerated. And we want to get, a closer view as to what it really means to face this. I'd like to start off with hearing just how complicated it has been to be able to connect with your brother during his incarceration.
It's very complicated to get connected and to stay connected with him. It's very costly. The paperwork or the process to stay connected to him, you know, is difficult. And it's easy to see why a lot of families, you know, don't try to stay connected to their loved ones in prison.
And Amanda, you know, what have you done to support him while he's been in there?
I have to write my brother letters. I think even just writing letters and talking on the phone, it doesn't seem like you can do enough to stay connected or to make them feel, you know, to make them feel normal or to make them feel loved. But I write letters. I send pictures. We talk on the phone when we can, because it is, like I said, it is pretty costly to get calls from inmates, and you have to, you know, talk with your cell phone provider and, you know, do all kinds of things from that end. But, you know, if it's your family, you know, you got to try to do everything that you can. And my family, we've definitely did that.
And Amanda, how else has your brother's incarceration affected you?
It's affected us to the core. He's the youngest brother. He's the youngest in the family. You're going to have to excuse me. I get
Amanda.
Emotional.
Sure, Amanda. Take a moment. And I know, you know, how heavy this can be, you know, especially when, you know, these family members, you know, they're intricate to our, you know, family fabric. And Amanda, we do appreciate you sharing with us today. And if there's something you'd also like to share about the toll it takes when a loved one is incarcerated, that's why we have this program today, for you to share a little bit about this.
Also, if there are any folks who are working in the field to help families who are dealing with this, you know, what's your best advice? Give us a call. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd like to go ahead and introduce another guest joining us from Rapid City, South Dakota. Is Marletta Pacheco, and she is one of the founders of the South Dakota Prisoner Support Group, and she is from the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. Welcome to Native America Calling, Marletta.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Marletta, any words, you know, for family members, much like Amanda, where this is such a heavy toll on a family? Go ahead, Marlita.
Yes, you know, we've had families get together and just talk about the effects that it's had on our families. And a lot of the same things that she's talking about is the ways that you can stay connected, and that's by writing and sending pictures, and when you can afford it, do phone calls, you know, accept phone calls and talk to them, because there's that wall, you know, that separates us, and we want to tear that wall down by keeping our communication open and to find other people who's been through the same thing and to talk about it and to be able to share the experience also.
And Marlita, you know, it might sound simple, but, you know, why is communication such a key? I mean, you read it often when you hear about, you know, how families are dealing with this. It's often big advice. But, you know, where is the healing in that? Or why is it so important to stay connected?
I think if you were to see one of the grandchildren and how their eyes light up when they hear from their mother, or when you see the hope grow and there's just that connection that's family, and it's a powerful and strong connection. And to know that those that are inside often feel abandoned and they feel, you know, forgotten. And so for us to be able to keep that communication open is very important.
All right. Thank you for that, Marlita. And again, our phone lines are open if you'd like to join us. And, you know, you can share your thoughts. If it feels more comfortable to call in anonymously, feel free to. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can tell us how the incarceration of one of your loved ones is affecting you. Again, phone lines are open. You can also send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. I want to go back to Amanda. And Amanda, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about, you know, how all of this is affecting not only you, but your family?
I think I would have to say some, you know, it's a reciprocal sort of healing that you get when you can talk or see your loved one in prison, and to not give up, you know, to try to always stay connected to them, because like the lady before, she said that it is very powerful, you know, to see that, to hear that happiness, or to see that happiness when they see their kid or when they hear from their mom or their father. My advice would be to, you know, don't punish them. You know, they're being punished. You know, they've been punished already. So to, you know, love them, because they, as much as, you know, one may be angered by this, by the circumstances, you know, you're always going to be family. You know, your blood. There's no way to change it. So you always got to support them no matter what. You know, we all make mistakes at some point, and some make bigger mistakes than others. Some have to, you know, a lot of my brother's circumstances, because he is a substance abuser. And that's not, you know, a lot of people in Native America abuse substances, and he's really young. He's 25, and he's been in prison for almost 2 years. And, you know, it's a disease. You know, there's help. You know, they try to help the inmates in there, especially for natives. They get the opportunity to go to sweat lodges or to some ceremonial healing services, I guess.
And Amanda, I'm glad you mentioned that, talking about, you know, how just even knowing that your loved one does have access to some form of healing, or, you know, even if it's the native ways there. And Marletta, I'd also like to hear from you, too, of just how, you know, knowing that, you know, your loved one who is incarcerated has access to some of this. Does that provide any kind of relief, Marletta?
I know that here in South Dakota that they have the Native American groups, and they do the traditional way of healing, and they have their own, like, support within, and they pray for each other, and they know when somebody lost somebody, and they talk to each other, and they themselves also inside develop their own support, as well as reaching out to family on the outside, too, for that. It's a difficult time, but it does bring healing and help to them when they pray. And they need, no matter if it's Christian or, you know, whatever it is, I really think that prayer helpful.
And Marletta, what about some of the stigma that Amanda mentioned? You know, often do people, you know, associate a stigma with somebody who is incarcerated? You know, they just put a label on them and leave them there. Any thoughts, Marletta?
Yes, that's happened. You know, it just seems like to me that it's part of the feeling ashamed to talk about it because of that. And I had an experience with my own grandson who shut down at school. And, you know, I knew why, but they didn't. And I'd mentioned, and I talked very privately to one of the teachers, and instead of them showing more support and love towards him or understanding, they actually kind of started targeting him, which I had to deal with again. So, yeah, it just seems like people treat you different if they know that you have one or more people in your family incarcerated, definitely.
And if that's something you're dealing with, you'd like to share your thoughts on it, call us right now. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Let's take our first caller. We have Sean in Wilson, North Dakota. Sean, welcome to the hour, and what would you like folks to know?
Well, I spent some time in an Idaho prison, spent 5 years, and I'd like folks to know that people do forget about you in there. When I first got there, I got letters every week from all kinds of people, teachers, family, friends. After my 5 years, the only thing I could guarantee was my child support statement once a month. So people do forget about you. I mean, my girlfriend, she forgot about me and moved on, and it's just, it is hard in there, and people do forget about you. The world passes you by.
All right, Sean, thank you for sharing with us there in Wilson, North Dakota. Let's take another call. We have Tina in Phoenix, Arizona, connecting to us online. Tina, what would you like to share?
Hi, yes, hi. My name is Tina Luna. I currently have three people that I know that are incarcerated. My brother, who's incarcerated in Arizona. I have a good friend of mine who is incarcerated in the state of California, and he's been in there for 23 years. And then I have a cousin, my dad's nephew, is incarcerated in Washington. And I have a criminal justice degree from Arizona and ASU, and I thought I knew the treads of walking, you know, down the DOC path, do's and don't's. And it's different states, different laws. It's just mind baffling.
With my brother currently here, he has a lot of support from family. Me, my sisters, my husband, my mother, my father gets a lot of letters, get commentary and this and that. It's just very hard for us as a family, you know, financially, emotionally. But in the long run, I think it honestly hurts the kids the most, because having the children not seeing their father and then trying to walk the muddy waters with the exes, you know, because they got to continue their lives, you know, the ex, they have significant others, their girlfriends or boyfriends, and it really affects the little ones. And, you know, trying to be neutral on both sides is very hard to try to keep the, I think the most important thing is to try to keep the children involved however way possible. With my brother, it's just to keep him pictures, keep that knowing that they're not forgotten, letters and phone calls and even drawings are very heartwarming to him. And with my cousin in Washington, I just put in contact with him within the past year. And like I said, I thought I knew how to go about the DOC, whether it's in different states. I wrote to him. He sends me stuff. I write to him. I know what kind of pictures not to send him, just family members. But anyways, I got a letter a couple of days ago, a rejection letter saying that my letters were going to stop going because I was on a no letter, no correspondence to him. So I read further into it, and then it says that I was only allowed 10 pictures to my cousin. And I know that I don't send, you know, profanity or shots of anything, but I was just floored. And when I went to the website, it had this whole list that was totally different from California, from Arizona. He's only allowed 10 pictures, and he has to send out 15 for every 10 he has to get in. So he's basically only in possession of 10 pictures at a time.
Thank you, Tina. I want to go back to Marlita on this. And, you know, when somebody is incarcerated, especially from our Native communities, it doesn't always mean that they're somewhere close. And much like Tina is expressing with one of her family members, you know, being at a distance. Marlita, you know, how does one navigate when they're in the system, you know, hundreds of miles away? How does distance play a factor?
Oh, that has a big impact on families. You know, when my daughter got incarcerated, she's in the federal system, and they sent her to Dublin, California, and that's over 1,000 miles. And I know how important it is to keep families connected, but that's impossible. You know, just like with a lot of our families, we don't have a reliable car to make the trip. We don't have enough gas money, and, you know, it's hard when we get there, if we do, to get a place to stay with all the, you know, grandchildren and everything so that they can visit, you know. And the distance is really, even here South Dakota, the majority of the prisons are clear on the other side of the state, with the exception of one here in town just recently. 300 and some miles, you know. It's like terrible. And we just can't afford it. And that, to me, is one of the biggest roadblocks of visitation for families.
Thanks, Marlita. And I'm also asking you, if you're out there listening, you know, has it been difficult to connect with your loved one while they have been incarcerated? You know, what were the obstacles? What about even being able to visit them? Give us a call. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Marlita, your support group grew out of a need. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, the South Dakota Prisoner Support Group had its humble beginnings in 2001, and that's when they found my nephew hanging in his cell at the state prison. And it was during the wake services for him that a lot of the community that came had somebody who was locked up. And after the service, we just started talking about the need for us to have a place and to find others who are having the same experience, you know, on the inside and out. And we started out just with some memorial walks for those who died in prison and also to bring attention to our people in prison. We'd start talking about the effects of incarceration on our families, and we talked about the feelings of loss and how we're just, it's a type of mourning. And I know that when they sent my daughter away, my feelings were they buried her alive and nobody knows and nobody seems to care. And that was one thought and feeling that really stuck with me. And, you know, it's seeing the children, you know, starting to shut down at school, and how a lot of the families that came forward were the grandmas who were started to raise the grandchildren. And a lot of them being elderly, you know, that's hard to see. And then, of course, some are taken into the child welfare custody. And we talked about it, about how important it is not to be separated and not to, you know, break the communication. Of course, the transportation was hard, but also even the phone calls. You know, a lot of the grandmas on the reservation need those phones in case of an emergency, yet a lot of them, you know, would give that up because they would accept phone calls from their loved ones and eventually get their phones shut off. And, you know, some of the things that we did to address those was to start attending meetings, local meetings and state tribal meetings. And we start just talking and for families and for our loved ones inside to start making a change. Even like on Native American Day or any time we get an opportunity, we would try to set up a table with lots of information on it.
It's great to get, you know, folks, you know, a chance to even be able to speak about this, too. And I can imagine, you know, the great support that you've provided to the folks you've connected with. And Marlita, we're going to continue after the break here. We're going to pause for a moment, but we also want to hear from you, too. Also want to go ahead and take a focus on, you know, how this affects our young ones. If this is something you would like to comment on, give us a call. Phone lines are open. We'll keep them open through the break, and we will be right back. This song is from the album Songs of Our Old People. It's a tribute to the smooth sound of Oklahoma Round Dance. On the next Native America Calling, we'll learn more about this style of music. We hope you can join us for our June Music Maker Edition.
Support by NativeGiving.org, empowering Native children and families through community giving. The organizations included on NativeGiving.org are developing strength-based solutions to ensure the health and well-being of our most valuable resource, our children.
All the donations made on NativeGiving.org go toward the organization you choose.
Information on how you can partner with successful innovations at NativeGiving.org. Funding for the Justice Series comes from the Left Tilt Fund.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. And when you think of millions of people in prison or jail today, do you consider the family members and loved ones who are also impacted? That's our discussion today. You can also take part in our conversation. If you've seen this up close in the past or have a family member in prison right now, you can share your story with us. You can tell us just how you're dealing with it. Also, what kind of support systems do you have in your area? And if you want to call in anonymously, you're welcome to. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. On the line with us today is Marlita Pacheco, and she is one of the founders of the South Dakota Prisoner Support Group. And if you have any questions for her, please do call in. Again, our number is 1-800-996-2848. And as we heard in the first half, and we continue to hear that this issue affects children as well. And we're now going to turn to the kids program Sesame Street. This program decided to take on this issue and put it in the center of one of its episodes.
I feel so
ashamed.
Yeah.
And confused.
Yeah.
I know all those feelings, Alex. I had them all too.
You did?
Sure. Kids can have lots of different feelings when one of their parents is incarcerated. And you know what? It's okay to feel whatever way you feel.
Really?
Really.
And are you currently looking for outlets to help your child cope with their incarcerated parent? Would an episode like this help you start a challenging conversation with your child? Also, what words do you use to explain things to their young hearts and minds? And what has been successful in talking to children about their parent or family member being in prison? Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And while you're dialing in, here is more from Sesame Street and their episode where incarceration is explained to young child viewers.
In jail? Why?
I don't like to talk about it. Most people don't understand.
Actually, I do understand what you're going through. When I was about your age, my dad was incarcerated, too.
He was?
Wait, what's carcerated? And why was your dad in it?
Incarcerated is when someone breaks the law, a grown-up rule, and then they have to go to jail or prison.
And I'm going to take this now to Marlita. Marlita, I'd like to hear your reaction on how this kid's show presented this subject.
I don't think I've seen the whole thing from just what I've just heard. I think it's an important message to children and that, you know, a lot of times you try to let the children know their parents are not bad. You know, they've made mistakes, but they're not bad, and everybody makes mistakes. And some, and you know, my own experience in talking with people is that a lot of them that are in prison did it while they were on some type of drug or alcohol or something. You know, so once they're off of that, they're back to really good hearts and loving children, you know, and parents too. So yeah, I like the idea of them doing Sesame. I wish they would do more, actually.
And Marlita, you know, do you think that there is, you know, a growing need to even have, you know, programs that are focused for young people, maybe even having, you know, peers of their own to talk to who are facing something similar?
Yes, I think that in schools, I think the counselors and them should be aware when a child shuts down, you know, to be able to talk to them to see if that isn't one of the reasons why, and to be able to help that child by being informed on the whole emotional, you know, loss that the children are feeling. Their hearts are breaking, and sometimes it's difficult to just kind of keep going when things are, they just suffered a loss there. And, yeah, I think not only in our schools, but I think in our churches and in our community discussions, we need to be talking about our children. One of the things a gentleman said to me a long time ago was that he said, you know, we need to be the ones who start working on providing a healthier community for our loved ones to come back to. And that means developing a healthier community with more healing in it for our children and for our families, too.
All right. Thank you for that, Marlita. And I also want to hear from our audience today, too. You know, what about our children? How are they affected when one of their parents is incarcerated? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Share your thoughts with us. You can also send us a tweet. We're taking a look at Twitter right now, and our handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd like to add another voice to the hour. We have Dr. Jody Becker-Green with us today. She's the Washington Department of Corrections Program Administrator, and she's joining us live from Camp Lyle McLeod in Belfair, Washington, where a group of 28 kids who have parents who are incarcerated are working together. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Becker-Green.
Thank you. It's great to be with you this morning.
And Dr. Becker-Green, we are hearing, you know, from our guest, Marlita, about the importance of considering how all of this affects our young people. Anything you would like to kick us off with of how children are affected when they have parents who are incarcerated?
Certainly. You know, I think just the disruption of having a family member or a loved one go away to prison is just extremely traumatic for young kids, regardless of what age they are. Incarceration really disrupts family relationships and just family functioning. It leads to issues of abandonment and loss, weakened attachment caused by the separation. You know, we've seen kids struggle with emotional, psychological, developmental, and financial health and well-being. So I think that the impacts are profound, and really, depending on the age and stage, the developmental stage of a child can really have lifelong impacts.
And Dr. Becker-Green, we've heard some from Marlita about, you know, how this, you know, can affect a family. Anything else that you would like people to know about how, you know, children or just families are impacted when they have a loved one incarcerated?
Yeah, I think, you know, from families and from children in particular, they, you know, talk about feelings of shame, feelings of guilt, anxiety, having facing social stigma, you know, from relatives, neighbors, friends, community members. I think the loss of financial support can be significant for families. I think with kids in particular, when you lose some family stability, you may also lose some of your housing stability, which makes kids more mobile. And we know when kids become more mobile, they're not staying in the same school. Kids can have, you know, poor academic performance or increased delinquency behavior. There's also at times increased risk for child maltreatment, whether it's child abuse or neglect. So I think there's all of those things that come into play. And when I think about kids impacted by incarceration in particular, I largely think these kids are invisible. You know, nobody runs around with a banner or a tag that says, hey, my mom and dad are incarcerated, right? Kids don't talk about it. And I think creating safe avenues for kids to be able to express and work through some of the emotions of having the loss of a loved one in incarcerated is profound. We know that having a parent incarcerated is one of the adverse childhood experiences, and from that body of research, we know that childhood trauma and adversity has lifelong impacts on one's health and well-being.
Hold right there, Dr. Becker-Green. I want to go into that in more detail, but I got a caller we want to take. We are bringing in Lorna in Hopi, Arizona, tuned in on KUYI. Lorna, what would you like to add?
Just listening this morning, turned it on, and I heard something really that caught my attention. So I thought I'd like to call in to let you know how to stay connected with your loved ones while they're in prison. And I have a loved one in there, too, and it hurts not to be able to see them. And the only way that you can stay be connected is calling the prisons and letting them know that you're coming and what type of rules they have. You have to get all their rules and how you need to go and see them and get all those paperwork in so you're able to go, because they get sent here and there on from Arizona to New Mexico and further down south, and you're not able to see. And once you have financial when you have your financial all situated and ready to go, and you get there, and the prison says you're not able to see them. So you have to keep calling, even though you're going on that weekend. You have to keep connected with them to make sure they're going to be open. There's a lot of laws, rules that they have, and it's very, very hard, and even the dress code. So you have to really read the dress code. Sometimes you get there. Now that when I've been going constantly, maybe at least two times out of the month, and now that he's further down south, we only go one time out of the month. And the children, they really want to see them, but also it's very, very difficult for them to see their families in prison. And they're very excited, and they need to have counseling available for children in schools. That way they're dealing with that. Once the parent gets incarcerated and one of the parents moves on, then the children are having difficulty with another person that they have to, either their mother's boyfriend or father's girlfriend, and that then they shut down and don't want to do work or getting more into trouble. So those things need to be looked at too. And our tribal law system, now it goes with federal law, so they serve the tribal law and then they have to go to the federal.
And, you know, we heard about this, you know, in our series about, what natives face when they are in the justice system. Not only are they facing sometimes a state system, sometimes it's three. It's tribal, federal, and state. And that can lead to even more complications. And, Lorna, we do appreciate your call and sharing your thoughts on this, too. Dr. Becker-Green, Lorna brings up another key issue, you know, when we talk about how our youth are affected. And even making the decision if you're going to take your children along to visits. Dr. Becker-Green, do you have any thoughts on that, or how are parents handling, making that decision?
Yeah, and a huge thank you to Lorna for sharing that information. I think she touched on just so many key points about what it's like to have to go through the incarceration experience. I think just alone the visitation barriers that families face, right? They have inadequate information about departmental policies and procedures. Scheduling visitation can be a nightmare. Geography sometimes is a barrier, and, we've seen families struggle with just having the financial means to provide transportation to go to a facility on the other side of the state. We've done a lot of work here in Washington State to make our visitation rooms more friendly to kids by sectioning off an area and providing opportunities for, games and social interaction with their family member while they're there. But, just the process even of going, getting checked in for visitation can be frightening or uncomfortable, embarrassing or humiliating. And so I think, every family is unique. Every family is different and will handle the situation differently. I always think it's best, depending on the age of your child, to, not scare them about what's happened, but being frank, being honest, and creating that safe space for kids to talk about what's going on, even though it's shameful or painful or embarrassing. Absent information, kids are going to fill it in and create their own kind of stories, because that's what humans do and what kids do. You know, trying to find ways to bring kids into the visitation room. One thing we do here in Washington State is we have video visitation. So for those families who may not want to expose their child or children to the actual prison setting, we've created avenues to do video visitation so people can do it from the comfort of their home, or we've got a couple public spaces set up around the state so you can go in. You can still connect with your mom or dad, auntie, uncle, or grandparents, have a conversation, be engaged, but not physically be in the prison facility. I think by, you know, even encouraging children to send letters, send cards, send pictures is another great way for them to stay connected. And I know talking to the men and women in our Washington facilities who have children, it means the world to them to get a letter from their child or to have a picture. They're so proud of their kids, and I think many, you know, want to find ways to positively be involved and engaged with them.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Becker-Green. There's still time left in the hour to add your voice. All you have to do is call in 1-800-996-2848. And Marlita, anything you'd also like to add, you know, if parents are, you know, faced with that decision, you know, do I take them for visitation or not? Any advice, Marlita?
I think it's important. It's a hard experience to take your grandchildren over to visit. It's hard for both, but yet at the same time, it's treasured time, you know, where they can actually see, feel, and touch their mom or their dad, and to give them a hug and, you know, exchange that affection that the parents have with their children, and it's really, really important. And not to have that, I think, is worse than actually the difficult part of visiting. During visitations, we would leave, and I would see so many in tears. And that was hard, but you knew at the end, too, that it's worth it because they got to see each other and hug each other and let each other know they love them, you know.
Sure. Thank you, Marlita. I want to take another call. Let's go now to Holt Villa, Arizona. We're going to bring in Furman, who is connecting to us on KUYI. Furman, what would you like to share?
Hi. Yeah, it's good to hear everybody speaking and, you know, that know the people that aren't forgotten. And it's just like I was saying, you know, my daughter, she had a hard time when she was in kindergarten, and she used to cry a lot. So my wife, she talked to the teachers, and when she did, you know, they would kind of pull her to the side and talk with her, excuse me, and work with her a little bit better, you know. It kind of helped her out. So when I came home, you know, I started, you know, taking part in more in her life, you know. I've been out like 3 years now, over 3 years, and today I'm sober and I feel a lot better about it. But they used to come down and visit, and those were good times and stuff, but I know the financial burden it has on our families today, you know, being able to deal with that when they come down, and the lodging and the food, the gas, and it's a lot. And sometimes us, when we're incarcerated, we forget about that stuff. All we want to do is just see our families, you know, and it is really good. But, you know, and I never felt like I was abandoned by any of my family members, even though I didn't get as many letters and stuff from other loved ones and stuff, but, you know, I know that they never forgot about me. But what helped me today, where I am today, is, you know, praying and going to the sweat lodge. And I don't know if a lot of those penitentiaries out there still have sweat lodges. I know they're trying to take some of them out. But just to remind your loved ones to continue praying and continue reminding them that they're not forgotten. And they need to take responsibility on their part, too, and remember when they come home to act out what they promised their loved ones while they were inside, and to be happy with their family like I am today.
All right, Furman, thank you for your call there in Holt Villa, Arizona. Tuned in on KUYI, and you can also continue to reach out to us, share your thoughts on this topic by sending us an email at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. You can also send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Dr. Becker Green, earlier you mentioned, you know, it's really important to connect with youth because if you don't, sometimes it leads to other things. Sometimes this is linked to why we see more young people in the juvenile justice system. Dr. Becker Green, any comments on that?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that as, you know, as a public servant, but, you know, as a member of society or just, you know, individuals, families, and communities, when we see vulnerable families or families who are going through struggles, you know, it's our social and moral obligation to intervene and to help in any way that we can. And I think when I think about what we're doing here at camp this week is really trying to break that intergenerational cycle of incarceration that we know exists in this country. And trying to go in and say, you know, you can be different. You are resilient. You have many good, positive things about you. And finding ways to just provide a different avenue or a spark within someone to say, I don't have to go down that path. I am different is really, really important. You know, I think youth mentoring programs are amazing. And being able to connect those youth who are just on the edge or disenfranchised is so critical. Research shows that having a caring, loving adult in your life that's not your family matters and really makes a huge difference on a child's life trajectory.
And Dr. Becker Green, the camp that you're at currently is pretty special. Any more details you'd like to share on it, especially about having that peer support?
Oh, absolutely. So we're very fortunate here in Washington State. We've partnered with the Girl Scouts of Western Washington to host the first ever camp for kids ages 8 to 12 who have a mom or dad or both in one of Washington's state prison facilities. Our parents who are incarcerated went through a lengthy application process for their child. We had 89 kids apply to be part of the camp and then went through our own rigorous selection process. But the really powerful thing is we've got this diverse group of children who come from all over the state of Washington, who are here to just have a normal child experience while also having, you know, glimpses of opportunities to work on any kind of issues or feelings they may have about having their parents being away in a very safe environment with peers who are like them. And what we've seen just in the 24 hours we've been here is just this transformation of kids who, you know, who arrived yesterday just a little bit curious, a little bit nervous, and to see the joy, the laughter, the friendships, and the camaraderie that's building today is just, there's no words to describe it. It's pretty amazing, pretty unique, and these are all just really, really special kids, and we've got, the camp is largely staffed by Department of Corrections staff, and so the added bonus is the counselors that we have here know some of the parents of the kids, and you know, being able to build positive connections or say, hey, you know, I was talking to your dad a couple of weeks ago, and he was so excited that you were coming to camp. And you just see their eyes light up like, oh, my gosh, you know my dad? So it's pretty neat.
It sounds like an amazing program. And Dr. Becker Green, any advice for our listening audience, you know, if something like this isn't in place, any steps they can take to have different programs or even just kicking up a support group?
Yeah, you know, I think for families in particular who are impacted by incarceration, encouraging your neighbors, your churches, your faith-based providers, your community providers, to really pay attention to create programming that, you know, for prior to incarceration, during incarceration, most importantly, during that transition back home, right, where relationships are going to be tested and need to be reestablished, teaching parenting skills, how to manage conflict, how to manage behavior, how to engage in a pro-social way with your child is really important, and that's where we all can come together because we all have something to offer to make people whole again and make families whole again. I think just, you know, being able to teach parental responsibility and accountability is critical, and we can be doing that while we have people incarcerated, and we can be doing that with folks as they return to their home and community. And most importantly, I think, is making sure that the services we have to offer are culturally relevant to the populations that we serve. Again, we're really fortunate here in Washington State. We've got some great partnerships with our tribal nations and with some of our community-based providers that serve our American Indian Alaska Native populations to not only offer cultural programming within each of our 12 facilities, but also to help bridge that connection back to community. And I think that's really important, too, is to pay attention to specific cultural needs during all phases of incarceration.
And Dr. Becker-Green, if anybody wanted to connect with you or the program or had more questions after the show, what's the best way to connect with you?
So the best way is to reach me by phone, and my phone number is 360-725-8889. I can also be reached on email at jmbeckergreen at doc1.wa.gov.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Becker-Green. And, you know, if you'd like to get in contact, those are the contacts there. We also do archive our program so that if you wanted to go back and take a listen to the hour or refer the hour to a friend, you can find it on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And this is number 3 in our series, taking a look at the prison and justice system. If this is something that you'd like to know more about, we do encourage you to visit us at NativeAmericaCalling.com. And we have reached the end of the hour. I want to thank our guests, Amanda Teller, Marlita Pacheco, and Dr. Jody Becker-Green for sharing their thoughts and their stories. Thanks to our crew here, Monica Brain, Andy Murphy, Stephen Emmons, and also Kavi Movahead screened your calls today. And thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. We will be back again tomorrow with more from our electronic talking circle. And if you would like to suggest any show topics, please do reach out to us. Our email is comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. Have a wonderful day.
This program supported by the Peace Corps, the government agency sending thousands of volunteers to live and work alongside people in more than 60 countries worldwide. The Peace Corps will allow you to share your unique cultural heritage and promote world peace and friendship. We have rewarding work opportunities around the world in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. It will change your life and the lives of others. More information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov. Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at uttc.edu. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.